Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season show us big risk can yield big rewards, like Rob Reilly, the creative head of one of the world's leading advertising firms.
I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment.
Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Pennies, nickels, dimes, quarters, dollar bills, $100 bills.
Nice.
That's a really obscure song. If you guys recognize that, let me know. And my roommate from college does not count because he's the one who introduced me to it.
Yeah, this podcast is not going to be about the Benjamins.
No, but it's about currency. It's about a digital currency called Bitcoin.
Yeah, so all of you who have been asking us
about Bitcoin, this is it.
Yes.
So we have an article on the site about how currency works, which is useful to kind of get a background on this. Keep in mind, you know, currency is sort of based upon just a mutual agreement among everybody that a representation of wealth actually is worth something.
Yes.
Because, you know, we all recognize that there are certain products out there that we either need or want, and we recognize there are also services that we need or want, and there's stuff that we can provide, and that by providing some things we can get other things, and that way we all can live. Well, currency is just a method of exchange so that you can get those services or products without having to do a direct exchange, because that gets messy. The yes. Barter system is not really easy to navigate.
Yes, I can't think of a thing that I could really do, well, maybe a couple small things I could do to convince a computer manufacturer to give me a new computer.
Right, how many over chickens is an Xbox 360?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it can be a very useful thing, although at one time, for example, the United States currency system was based on the gold standard. You could take a dollar bill to the exchange and get a dollar's worth of gold, and you would need a microscope to see it. But that was the way it used to work, and that is not the way it works anymore. That has been changed for several decades. So now at this point—
Of course, you could have always argued that the value of gold was arbitrary anyway. So really, it was a piece of paper representing value of a mineral that represented value.
Yes.
So in other words, you're
ruining,
like,
the magic, Jonathan.
I'm just saying that eventually you get to the point where currency is based upon a shared delusion among everybody, and that if we all sat there and said, hey, wait a minute, it would all fall apart.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. It's a medium of exchange. And for the most part, the people of Earth are doing business with money that is backed by a government of some type, or in some cases, you know, a coalition of governments, like, yeah, for example, the euro.
The euro, exactly. So yeah, usually you've got some sort of state backed currency.
Yeah.
And back in the old days, currency, of course, was made out of precious metals, which again were precious because they were pretty and they were hard to get. Those scarcity and pretty are two of the things that really fell into the old currency system.
Yeah, and of course, at one time, salt was a medium of exchange.
Sure, that's where we get salary.
Exactly.
It's what I get my salary in. I don't know about you.
Big blocks of salt?
Exactly, yeah, it's salt lick. It's delicious.
That explains that big salt crystal at your desk.
It's not just a great barbecue joint. So currency is all based upon various people agreeing that whatever the medium of exchange is actually has value.
Yeah.
Right? So that's going to lead us – and just a side note, have you ever heard of Joshua Abraham Norton?
That name does sound familiar, but I can't place it.
Also known as Imperial Majesty Emperor Norton the First.
No.
He's an eccentric, that's one way of saying it. Crazy is another way. He essentially declared himself an emperor of the United States while living in San Francisco.
Okay, that's why it sounds familiar.
Yeah, one of the things he did, he was kind of this eccentric, celebrated guy living in the 19th century San Francisco. One of the things he did was he printed his own money. He printed his own money, and local merchants, some of them would accept it. They would accept his local – they thought he was an interesting character, and they would accept his money and sell him goods with his money, which meant that his currency, at least on a micro level, was valid because two parties agreed that particular method of currency had value.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That just shows you how tenuous the concept of currency really is. Now let's move on to Bitcoin. I just had to give Emperor Norton a shout out.
Well, I figured the next person of interest in this discussion would probably be Satoshi Nakamoto.
Yes, who is the inventor of Bitcoin. Now, Bitcoin is a digital currency. It's not the only digital currency out there. There are a lot of digital currencies that are connected to various games or virtual worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you could even argue things like Xbox points on the Xbox Live Marketplace are kind of a digital currency.
Yeah, the Facebook credits.
Facebook credits. Yeah, there are other versions out there. Although
Linden
a lot
dollars.
Of these, Linden dollars was the one I was mainly thinking of. That's, of course, Second Life, right?
Uh-huh.
Linden dollars, yeah. So there are other digital currencies out there, but most of these tend to be very contained, right? There's only a tiny little niche marketplace where you can spend this currency.
Yeah.
And otherwise, it has really not much value. You usually can't resell the digital currency to get real, quote unquote, real money back.
Yeah. I mean, you can, for example, with, if you have 10 euros, you can, have a service that your friend gives you, say, you know, hey, yeah, I'll help you, I'll help you move your stuff from your old apartment to your new apartment if you give me money for beer. Okay. Well, here's 10 euros. And for that person, then he can take that 10 euro note and go spend it at a store
get really good beer because you're apparently in Europe and the beer there is so much better than in America.
Oh, people can write to Jonathan.
Oh, come on. Everyone knows that.
Well, I buy European beer, so I guess it's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you can use that in many places, or you could take it to a bank and exchange it for Japanese yen. Or,
yes,
American dollars or wherever. But if you buy, go to the department store and buy one of those Facebook credit cards, cards with Facebook credits, and you enter that in your Facebook account, you can't get that back and go exchange it for Japanese yen.
Yeah.
Once it's in Facebook, it's in that world.
Yeah.
And that's all it is.
Exactly. Yeah. And also there tends – another element that tends to happen with a lot of these currency exchanges is there's a transaction fee.
Yes.
There may be several transaction fees depending upon the nature of the transaction. If you're purchasing something, there may be a transaction fee charged by the financial institution that is overseeing the transaction, assuming that you're not using cash.
Right.
Right. Let's take cash out of the element, out of this, because digital currency kind of falls between cash and credit.
Mm-hmm.
It's in this world that's sort of a vague, defined world right in the middle. So cash is, there are a lot of different benefits to cash. Cash means that depending on the nature of the transaction, you may be not paying taxes on something. Right?
Right.
I mean, that's why a lot of people like to do cash transactions. It means that there's no, there's not necessarily a paper trail. It allows you to make a transaction between two individuals without a third party intervening. When you're using credit, then that's different because there's now a trail there and there may be, you may have to have taxes, come into play so that you can not break the law.
Plus, you know, with point of sale terminals, there's no risk of skimming your credit card or debit card number if you are paying with cash.
Yeah.
Risk of identity theft is lower.
And also it's more anonymous.
Yes.
So two people meet with cash. You don't, cash is an agreed upon currency. That's fine. You purchased whatever it was you're purchasing, whether it's a service or a good. And it is not, again, there's no trail leading to that transaction. Now, with credits, it's much different. The anonymity factor is taken out of it. Digital coins are kind of, or Bitcoin is kind of a in between. There's some anonymity built in, and there's an ability to do a person-to-person transaction so that there's not a third party involved in this. So again, you can purchase stuff essentially tax-free, depending on the vendor that you're going to or the person, whomever it is that has agreed to sell you the service or product. And it also, unfortunately, Bitcoin has also been used, and this is kind of one of the more sensationalized elements of Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
It's been used in illegal transactions. For example, purchasing drugs. That's been in the news recently, where people have started to adopt the Bitcoin currency in order to purchase illegal substances. And the reason for it is because it's not going through any official channels. You can even purchase stuff across country lines because, again, it's a digital currency. It's not a physical currency. So if, let's say, your supplier is in another country, you can purchase something through Bitcoins on an agreed upon amount. And then that person gets the Bitcoins. They can then transfer those Bitcoins either into they can either use those Bitcoins to buy something else that they want, or they can try to sell the Bitcoins to someone else for an agreed upon amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of interesting. I mean, the finding out how much Bitcoins are trading for as in relation to established currencies is a kind of an interesting situation. That's the part that I have the hardest time understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do we determine how much a Bitcoin is worth to us in dollars, for example, or euros?
Right, right. Well, from what I've read, the value of Bitcoin right now is subject to a lot of speculation.
Yeah.
As in speculators.
Yeah, as in people who are investing in Bitcoin because they believe that this is something that's going to really take off and be successful, and therefore they can make a lot of money if they get in on the ground floor.
Yeah, sort of like the stock market is in a lot of cases. Like you'll see that with initial public offerings of stock, people will an IPO will take off immediately, especially for a lot of the tech companies. If you watch that. People say, oh, well, XYZ Industries, they make that cool software. Everybody's going to want that. So I think the stock is going to go up. I'm going to buy as soon as it comes out because it'll never be lower. It'll only go up. And so that's sort of what we're talking about. Now, the weird thing about Bitcoin is that it's made by you or could be made by you.
Yeah, it's you actually have to mine Bitcoins, but mining in this sense, it's kind of interesting. What Bitcoin does is it kind of emulates what an actual mining operation would be like in the mm-hmm. sense that let's say that you are a prospector for gold back in the old gold rush.
Okay.
And you find a vein of gold.
Eureka!
And you start mining that gold for all it's worth. Well, of course, the more you mine, the less gold there is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you eventually get to a point where you're having to put forth a lot of effort to get a little amount of gold because you've already mined the most of the gold out.
Yeah.
And then you start to have to make decisions of, is the effort I'm putting forward worth the amount of gold that I'm getting back?
Right.
Well, the Bitcoin system emulates that, and it's such an interesting process. So essentially what's going on is that it's a peer-to-peer network. Now that means that in order to be a part of mining Bitcoins, you join this network of other users, and your computer ends up making connections with other computers trying to solve a hash problem.
Mm-hmm.
And a hash problem is when you take at least two figures and you make another figure from them, and then you have to to solve some problem related to that new figure. And in this case, the way Bitcoins works is that there are 50 Bitcoins released at specific intervals.
Right.
And if your computer solves the hash of that particular, for that particular group, you get the 50 coins.
Okay.
Now, early on in this, remember, it was launched in 2009. Early on in this, it was relatively easy to solve the hash. And by solving the hash, this is the same sort of process that a lot of networked computer, like grid computing systems use,
mm-hmm.
where you connect and are folding proteins or something along those lines, or back in the old SETI program, you would, I hate to say the old SETI program, but we're talking about no more funding for it, but you would have your computer analyze radio signals for any potential actual intended radio signal as opposed to just random noise.
Right.
Your computer would work on this problem and then send results back to a master system, which would collate all that and then analyze it. Well, that's sort of the same thing that's going on with Bitcoin, except instead of trying to solve an actual problem, what you're doing is you're trying to mine these coins. And in the early days, you didn't have to have that much processing power to do it. But as more and more processors joined the network, more and more nodes in this peer-to-peer network joined, then the problem would get progressively more complicated. To the point now where if you go to the Bitcoin website and you read about mining, it says that most Bitcoin users don't mine at all because it's very competitive. And you've got people who are building machines, computers designed specifically to be Bitcoin miners. And they're using powerful processors, including and not CPUs. They're using graphics cards processors. Yeah, GPUs. Because they're faster to solve the kind of type of problems that Bitcoin depends upon for mining.
Mm-hmm.
So the odds of you solving the problem of, or your computer, I should really say, your processor solving the problem of that particular batch of 50 Bitcoins is very low. And it gets lower every time someone joins on with an even more powerful machine. And again, this is where we get into that analogy of mining for gold. Eventually, you're talking about spending so much money building and maintaining a machine, including things like paying for electricity, that it doesn't make sense to keep going. It you know, you're spending more money than you would earn through mining Bitcoins.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of interesting situation. And also the Bitcoins themselves will decrease over time. There's a finite number. I think it's 21 million Bitcoins are allowed ever.
Yeah, that's a basic law of the markets. I mean, some people, when you don't really understand how this works, they'll say, well, I heard that we're short $20 million. Dollars or whatever currency. It's like, why don't they just print more? Well, if you make too many of a currency, or you have too many certificates of stock for your company,
yeah.
at some point it begins to devalue
yes.
the institution that is represented by that. So the more money you print, the less the money is worth. The more
right.
stock certificates you release to shareholders, the less the company is worth.
So it's essentially the key takeaway there is currency and wealth are two different things.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Just because you have more currency does not mean you have more wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Because the wealth is dependent upon the perceived value of that currency. And the more currency there is, the less value people will perceive in it.
Right.
Which is, you know, that's why you can see historic ish problems with massive depressions breaking out across the globe in various eras because, the currency would get flooded. And mm-hmm. then you would have you would have a brief moment where everyone appears to be wealthy, and then costs would adjust to the amount of currency that was in the market, and then the currency would be practically worthless. Actually, that may be what happened to Spain after the discovery of the New World and the expansion into really exploiting the New World and pulling the wealth back over to Europe. People ask, well, what happened to all that gold that Spain was mining and shipping back to Spain, you know, from right. the New World? What happened to it? Well, a lot of what happened to it was it some of it sunk, some of it was stolen, but a lot of it made its way back to Spain. And people say, well, then Spain later on suffered some real economic hardship. Well, you get all this influx of gold in there, and it devalues the gold.
Right.
You know, so suddenly, yes, you've got all this precious material, but it's no longer as precious because there's more of it. There's that scarcity problem.
Mm-hmm.
So by capping Bitcoins at 21 million, there's already a finite limit. You're not going to make any more after that. And as more blocks are solved, the problems are contained in blocks. As more of these problems are solved, then fewer coins will be released over time. So remember I said that they'd be released in 50 coin batches.
Right.
Well, after a certain number of blocks are solved, that gets reduced to 25
mm-hmm.
coins. And then after that, so it's half the amount, right?
Right.
Same sort of thing. After each time it gets closer to the end, it's going to halve again and half again and half again. Now, it's not infinitely divisible. Bitcoins can be divisible down to eight digits.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a kind of like 8 bits you could think of. It's not going to continue ad infinitum. There will come a point where the last Bitcoins will essentially be released. You know, you're not going to end up with like a Bitcoin like 0.00000000000001 Bitcoins, and then it gets divided again by another tenth.
Right.
That's not going to happen. It's to me, it's an interesting concept. I still, frankly, I grapple with this a bit, but it's probably from a more philosophical standpoint than technical. I understand mm-hmm. technically.
Well, there is quite a bit of technology involved in it to make it more sturdy, if you will.
Yeah.
Because while there is some anonymity involved, there is a signature that goes along with a Bitcoin transaction.
Yeah, there's a public key and a private key encryption that's involved in this. And every single transaction is recorded.
Yes.
And becomes part of a history of transactions that then is a part of every future transaction.
Yeah. So it's not so much to track people's purchases and what they buy. So, you know, there are many companies that take Bitcoin, although
yeah.
most of them are, I didn't see anybody who wasn't an independent company taking Bitcoin. I didn't read every a list of every company.
Yeah, and a lot of them have Bit in the name, which suggests that their business was built around this currency in the first place.
But I saw that some web hosting providers use it. So let's say pay for a month's worth of web hosting with Bitcoin. People aren't going to go, Jonathan just bought web hosting with, you know, basically what they want to do is verify the authenticity of it and make sure that no one is counterfeiting.
Right. Because if it's a digital currency, then what stops you from, say,
making as many as you want
or sending or trying to spend the same Bitcoin twice?
Right. Right.
I mean, that's one of the big issues. That's why it has to be, recorded. So every single transaction has the history of all transactions as part of it. Now that data gets kind of compressed and hashed. So it's not getting, you know, it's not growing exponentially with every single purchase. But the idea here is that, it will prevent people from trying to spend the same currency multiple times just because it's in digital format.
Uh-huh.
And that's an important element. I mean, it's, there are other problems that have popped up around Bitcoin. For example, a lot of vendors now will no longer, or a lot of Bitcoin traders will now no longer make payments to PayPal accounts in return for Bitcoins.
Yeah.
Because accept PayPal accounts in return for Bitcoin. So let's say I'm a Bitcoin trader and I've got all these Bitcoins and someone comes to me and they say, I want to purchase some Bitcoins. I want 20 Bitcoins and I want it at the trading rate that is going right now, which is, you know, like $13 American or whatever. Let's make this transaction happen and I'll pay you through PayPal. Well, the problem that's been coming up is that these vendors will sell the Bitcoins and the transaction will complete. And then some unscrupulous people would then contact PayPal and complain, stating that they made a purchase but didn't receive anything in return. And Bitcoin, you know, it's this digital stuff. It's just bits. It's information. It's not a physical thing. And PayPal's response may be to stop the payment on that, and then the person may close out their PayPal account. And essentially what they've done is stolen some Bitcoins. So a lot of the traders, the big traders for Bitcoins, won't accept PayPal payments anymore.
Mm-hmm.
All right, because it's just, you know, it's too risky. So again, we're getting into that level between the anonymity and freedom of cash and the trappings that are all around using credit. Because of course, if you're using credit, not only are you being tracked, but you're also spending extra money just to purchase whatever it is you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read an article, by John Evans at TechCrunch about Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
According to what he said, the Electronic Frontier Foundation is now accepting donations using Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that organization is, about basically freedom of expression and, you know, protecting your personal rights online. And from what I've read, the organization likes the idea of Bitcoin because there isn't a government behind it. So, you know, you can't have your assets frozen by a government.
Yeah.
Because Bitcoin isn't part of a government.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting thought. On the other hand, if it's, you know, there's a flip side to everything. And if it's being used to fund illegal activities or, you know, a war machine, maybe that's not such a good thing. I don't know.
It all depends on, you know, ethics and legality are two different things.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's say that you live in a country that has a repressive government.
Uh-huh.
And there are specific things that are not allowed to be sold through normal means, which means that, you know, you'd have to go to some sort of black market to buy something that in another country you could purchase legitimately with no problem.
Right, right.
Then the Bitcoin transaction may give an avenue for that person to purchase such a thing without it ever being seen by that government.
Absolutely.
And so you're talking about clandestine buying at that point, and you're kind of undermining a financial system. So some people who adopt Bitcoin are doing it specifically because they see it as sort of the subversive way to undermine the status quo that that they feel is either corrupt or inefficient or whatever, you know, whatever reason they have in their minds that says, I don't want to be a part of this system anymore. I think the system is broken. I want to use this other system that's not dependent upon a state.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of people interested in Bitcoin for that. So you've got your speculators
mm-hmm.
who are looking at Bitcoin as a way to make money. Some actually literally in this case.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Although I guess I shouldn't say literally, the money is there. They're not making it. They're just uncovering it. Right?
Yes.
But then you've got the people who are using it because they want access to things that they normally could not get through quote unquote legitimate means.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the people who just don't have any faith or trust in any institution. And so they want to avoid using those institutions as much as possible. Now, again, the whole value of Bitcoin exists only so far as people agree that it exists.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, why does Bitcoin have a value? Because people agree that it has a value. If vendors were not accepting Bitcoins in return for goods and services, then that currency would be worthless. So there's nothing intrinsic about Bitcoin that makes it a desirable, valuable thing, except that we agree that it does.
Right.
Which blows my mind. But then so does currency. Currency blows my mind. I mean, any time you get away from – once you start moving away from the demonstrable, this has value to me because blah, 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 then my brain starts to hurt. And also I start looking at my 401k. And I think, I hope I got enough chickens to get that Xbox 360. Because you know what? BioShock is coming out soon and I want to play that game.
Well, you know, it's just safe to say that the Xbox 360 is a lot less messy than those chickens will be.
Yeah.
So you'll be happier once that exchange is made.
The moral of the story is don't count your Bitcoins before they're mined. All right. Well, do you have anything else to add about this?
Not after that joke.
Okay. Well, this is a really fascinating subject, and there's plenty on the net that you can read up on for Bitcoin, including things such as the actual mechanics of what goes into making it work, the nature of the hash problem that computers have to try and solve in order to mine Bitcoins, the type of rigs that people build to mine Bitcoins, the various vendors out there, the whole political philosophy behind people who have adopted Bitcoin. All of that stuff is out there on the web. It's a huge topic of discussion. And if you're interested, I do recommend checking out some more information on that. And of course, like I said at the beginning of the show, we have How Currency Works at HowStuffWorks.com. If you just want to get a good grounding of the basis of currency, period. Because, I mean, that you kind of need that in order to go beyond and start understanding the workings of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
If you guys have any other big topics you would like us to tackle, let us know. You can send us a message on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW. Or you can send us an email, and that address is TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon. Breaking news, everyone! So, we recorded this podcast a few weeks ago at the time that I'm recording this update, and some stuff has happened with Bitcoin that we really need to address. First of all, there was a hacking attempt, a successful one, against a currency exchange company that handled Bitcoin operations called Mt. Gox, G-O-X. And it was not an attack directly against Bitcoin. Bitcoin itself and the peer-to-peer network and all of that remained secure, but through getting the account information through this currency exchange company, the hackers were able to essentially, steal about 100,000 Bitcoins and then immediately start to sell them off, which caused the value of Bitcoins to plummet. It was trading at around $17 a coin and dropped down to essentially nothing. Since then, the value has stabilized. The company, the Mt. Gox, has managed to freeze all the accounts and at the recording of this update is trying to roll out the accounts again to users, requiring them to create a new strong password, and is essentially refunding everyone the money that they would have lost. But also in that process, shortly after the attack, another big event happened. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, the EFF, which had been accepting donations in Bitcoin format, decided to drop that. They are no longer accepting Bitcoin donations. Now, their reasons for doing so are not directly tied to the hacking attack, although the timing is very coincidental. They're more tied to things like concerns about the legality of Bitcoin in the sense that a lot of people are using, or maybe I shouldn't say a lot of people, some people are using Bitcoins to create illegal transactions, whether that's to purchase illegal goods or services or to try and circumvent taxation laws or other laws. That's beside the point. The point is that the EFF did not want it to look like they were endorsing a currency that might have questionable legality. And so they have backed away from that. Now, the EFF is all about protecting freedoms on the internet. So they champion causes like net neutrality and privacy. So for them to back away from this currency is kind of a big deal, at least within the internet elite circles. Will this actually spell the end of Bitcoin? I don't think so. I think that Bitcoin has enough support from other parties where it's going to keep going. It might actually slow down adoption of Bitcoin. So you may not see more vendors and other providers popping on to accept Bitcoins quickly. It might take a while. But it's important to remember again that this was not a direct attack against the service itself. It was an attack against one of the preliminary vendors. Although it does once again illustrate the importance of computer security and how vulnerable things on the internet can be to hackers. And as we all know, there are plenty of hackers out there from all different walks of life, including professional hackers to just script kiddies who are running some stuff that they found online. Anything that's going to be online is going to be prone to attack. Whether or not it can stand up to those attacks is another matter entirely. So, bottom line, do your research. Make sure that whatever it is you are investing in, whether it's Bitcoin or some other property, has good security. And even in this case, when it wasn't Bitcoin itself that was the problem, your investment might take a hit for a while. But if we're all careful and we're all smart, then hopefully we rebound from that pretty quickly. So that's the update on the news. And by the time this goes live, there may be even more developments. But just thought we should address that, since otherwise the podcast would sound horribly out of date. This is Jonathan signing off.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season show us big risk can yield big rewards, like Rob Reilly, the creative head of one of the world's leading advertising firms.
I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment.
Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.